So are we about ready to begin?
Yep.
Great. Good afternoon. My name is David Myron. I'm a member of the organizing group and also People Against Police Violence. Thank you for coming. Before we begin, I'd like to just sort of say that we have in our press packets the names and spellings of all the people who will be speaking, so you can get them there. I'd also like to ask the media if they could hold off on any of the questions till we be done with the press conference. And we will be running through at this press conference a number of different speakers, people who are going to offer their firsthand testimony about what happened to them on Saturday, August 20th. We also will be showing some video which documents some graphic scenes about what happened to some of these individuals here. And as everyone here is no doubt aware, on Saturday, August 20th, we were witness to one of the most aggressive police attacks on public demonstrations in recent history. And most alarming to us is the use of tasers for the first time in the city. Tasers, a weapon which have been responsible for as many as 150 deaths and which have been banned in a number of cities and which have also been called for, a moratorium has been called for by Amnesty International, the ACLU, and a number of other groups. So we are most alarmed by the use of tasers, particularly on Deanna over here. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce Nathan Schaefer. He's going to be our first speaker, and he's going to tell you about what Pittsburgh Organizing Group was doing on Saturday in the first place.
On Saturday, August 20th, the Pittsburgh Organizing Group called for and held a nonviolent demonstration to protest our government's recruitment policies domestically and, through that, our government's policies abroad in Iraq. Some members of the demonstration engaged in a small amount of nonviolent civil disobedience. We walked in the road when we didn't have a permit. We continued on to the recruiting center. From there, we moved on to the sidewalk and prepared to have our picket as planned. The recruiting center had already been successfully shut down simply by the announcement of our demonstration. And we feel this is a culmination of several months of hard work. We've had over a half dozen pickets. We've flyered at high schools. We have informational materials available for high school students, college students. We'd like to detail alternatives to military recruitment, and we also like to get facts out about military recruitment because we feel like the recruiters aren't necessarily honest with the folks that they're recruiting. And along those lines, the police reacted brutally to our peaceful demonstration, and those are the stories that you're going to hear today.
I'm just going to stand over here. Thank you, Nathan. Our next speaker will be Deanna Caliguri, and I again would like to thank the media for holding off on their questions until the end of our speakers. Thank you.
Hi. Like David mentioned, my name is Deanna Caliguri. I was in attendance at the demonstration at the recruiting station on Saturday. I'd like to tell you a little bit about the police violence that was inflicted on me during that day. I was taken to the ground by a police officer. During that time, I was pepper sprayed. The officer picked up my glasses, sprayed my face with the pepper spray. Once I got to the ground, I was then tasered in the thigh for what felt like an eternity. It was the most excruciating pain I've ever felt. I felt like I was burning. My hand reached down to feel what was on my leg, and I felt an electrical shock running through my entire body. I could not stop myself from screaming. I was cuffed and handed to various police officers who didn't know what to do with me. They put me in a police car first. Someone then took me out of the police car and shoved me in the back of a police van with no ventilation. I couldn't reach my face to wipe the gas and the mucus off my face. I felt like I was choking and suffocating in the van. I could not breathe. And I was then taken to Presby after about 45 minutes in the van, probably. And then I was taken to the jail. And that's what happened. It was horrifying. I could not believe that after I had already been sprayed and on the ground, they would then proceed to taser me. And yeah, that's all I have to say. Sorry.
Thank you, Deanna. We're now going to show video which shows inconclusively what Deanna has been talking about. And I'd like to thank Indy Media for working hard overnight to pull this together. Oh, yes. One moment. Towards the end of the press conference, we will be articulating our demands of the city and the police. Our next speaker is Carol Weedman.
Thank you. Just to say that all of us here are completely overwhelmed by the press attention that we've received. I first want to say that my personal point of view regarding military recruitment, which was the focus of this protest, was that I sincerely hope to help stop the killing and maiming of our children and other people's children. And the recruitment issue may be the thing that causes them to come home sooner than later. From my point of view, on Saturday, I joined the group walking down Forbes Avenue. I didn't intend to stay long. I was in a one-hour parking meter on South Craig. As the recruitment office was closed, we had walked to the business block of Forbes. A silent vigil was held, and then the plan was to just simply walk back to the Carnegie Library, and maybe people would say a few more words. I can verify the Irene family. All of a sudden, everything was calm, and I didn't know what was going on, but I was caught in a crush and pushed, and I was frightened. It was like the soccer matches. After that happened, I want to say the events from that time really are very well documented. There are numerous eyewitness accounts, videos, and I don't have to go through all of it. However, I did see the taser shot to Deanna. I was on the curb right above her. I saw the thing was aimed deliberately. At one point, I stepped down to try to just check on her, and I was told to get back up on the curb, which I did because I want to point that out. It's being said that I did not follow directions. The next thing that I witnessed was there was a young man sitting on the sidewalk, and again, that's documented in a lotus position. He was in a position of nonviolence, and the dogs were being egged on, and I sincerely thought they were going to bite him, and I asked the police, I said, please don't let them bite him, and that's documented. And as I turned to leave the area as instructed, we were supposed to disperse, I was the most surprised person when the dog lunged and bit me in the upper thigh and tore my trousers. After a half hour, 20 minutes, a half hour, very confused time when I was trying, I felt that I needed to go to the hospital to at least, it appeared to be blood on my pants, and of course, you can't just walk away from something like that. To add insult to injury, as I said, a half hour after I was bitten by the dog, I had had no medical attention, or I really didn't know what had happened. I was handcuffed in the middle of this street, marched into the paddy wagon, and there was a young woman in there who was, I think, referred to as the juvenile, and they had the door closed, and I didn't see any circulation of air. She was profusely wet and crying, and of course I opened my mouth and they left the door open and left a guard there for the rest of the time in the paddy wagon, and I was marched into Presby ER with my hands behind my back. My children in faraway places are getting calls, and and then I just have a question. I don't know if there's a representative from the city government here, and a question and a comment. It is the responsibility of policemen to maintain a neutral attitude in a situation like a peaceful protest. Was their behavior on Saturday professional in response to the existing provocation or an attempt to intimidate? Or perhaps it was even more than that. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. We're now going to show a video of the scenes that Carol was describing. Sorry. One of these words. Thank you.
Get your information. Come on. Go walk up on me. Go walk up on me.
I want to add that after Carol was detained, she was put in a paddy wagon. It was more than 90 degrees that day on Saturday. The sun was blaring down. And despite the efforts of members of the Thomas Merton Center and Pittsburgh Organizing Group, people standing here, the police were reluctant to even allow us to ask her if she was okay, to allow us to get her phone number so we could let her husband know that she was being arrested. And it was only after the effort of another reporter, who I want to thank in the AP, that we were able to find out that she was actually taken to Presbyterian Hospital. Our next speakers, I should add, are Rebecca Reed and Vince Irini and their kids.
Hello, so my name is Rebecca Reed. I attended the POG counter military recruitment protest on August the 6th by myself. And that event went very peacefully, and as a result of that, we made the decision to bring our children to last Saturday's event. My experience for the most part of the protest was fine. We walked peaceably along Forbes Avenue, had no problems. Once the demonstration reached the counter, the recruitment center, the crowd on the sidewalk was fairly dense in front of the center, so we kept our kids two stores down in front of the Bruegel's bakery window, where there was a low density of people and it seemed safe. Where we were for a short amount of time before we heard some jostling, and one of the protesters came rushing past in front of myself and my daughter Shanoa. She was on my back, piggyback style. He ran right past us and was literally thrown to the ground in the most violent manner by a large group of policemen, to the point where she actually said to me, "What are they doing to that boy, Mommy?" And then after that, as a result, the protesters who had been in front of the recruitment center came rushing down to see what was happening to their friend. And the only resistance, by the way, that I saw from them was shouting, "Let them go." Shortly after that, I heard screaming and there was more jostling, and it seemed like people were being pushed from the street into the sidewalk. And I was very frightened in the sense that I was in front of a glass window with a child on my back. And I said to the protesters in front of me, "I have a kid here." And I have to say to their credit that they were wonderful. They made sure, even though they were being pepper sprayed and pushed, they made sure that I had this much space in front of me so this child was not hurt. Then one of them actually came and sort of made a passage so I could get her out. She did get some pepper spray, I did too, but thanks to this person who got us out, it wasn't too bad, because we actually left the area where the police were pepper spraying. But my reaction was fright and just anger at the complete overreaction on the part of the police and the complete lack of concern for the public, because it might not have been me, it could have been anybody that happened to. It could be anybody that was on the sidewalk. And I will let my husband tell you what happened to my other child, because they were a little bit further down. But she was, later on, I had to talk to her. She asked me why the police were being so mean, and I had to explain to her for quite some time what had happened and try to calm her. She's still fairly shaken. This one's okay, but she's still a little bit shaken by what happened.
How old is Shanoa?
Shanoa's 3.
Caitlin's 7. So many times our focus could be lost because of police brutality. And so, you know, today we remember the children of Iraq. I was there a year ago, and the psychologists there were dealing with what they called the playground syndrome. Put a group of children in Baghdad in a room with each other and toys, and they didn't play. Take them out to a playground, and they would just scream and yell in fear and to get get out of the playground and go back to their homes. Caitlin was on my shoulders, and we, not to repeat what Rebecca had said, we just saw the police chasing one person who ran by us, who I think later on we found out did something as radical as tape a poster to the door. He was being thrown to the ground, and then all of a sudden all hell broke loose, and a lot of police came, and we were being pepper sprayed. Again, the punishment doesn't seem to meet the crime. Now, we were crushed against the plate glass window. Mind you, she was on my shoulders, and the people in Brugger's opened the door and literally dragged us in. And so someone there had the was quick enough to think that, as I was coughing, that it wasn't just a normal cough, but I was having an asthma attack, and so somebody had an inhaler, and Caitlin's eyes were watering, and she was coughing, and much more upset than Shanoa. Very upset about that. As you probably saw, in the dark, she could, you know, she could not watch the videotape. And so we think about the fear instilled in the children in Iraq, and that has come home. Also, just to say this, even though it's obvious to anybody who knows me, different members of the media and stuff like that, we would have never... we would have never brought our children to a demonstration if we thought they were going to be harmed, or if we thought people were going to be provocative. When people walked into the street against traffic, which is, I think, a great thing to do, we kept them back and on the sidewalk. And this morning, Lynn Cullen, in her her move towards genius, said that we should have kept our children at home, and that they're not props for the cause. And I would just take issue with that.
Thank you, Prince and Rebecca. Before we turn to our next speaker, I just want to let folks know what is left in the press conference. We're going to hear from another eyewitness testimony of what happened to him. Then we're going to hear from the new executive director of the Thomas Merton Center. And following that, Nathan and I will present the list of demands that we have the city and the police. And then we will entertain questions. So next up, Jonathan Robeson.
Thank you. Thanks, David. I am Attorney Jonathan Robeson. I am vice chairperson of the Fourth Ward Democratic Committee. And I was on the rally, counter-recruitment rally, because we're very upset that our kids are being hoodwinked into being sent away to be killed, to kill or be killed. And I was going along the march in my scooter, because I have multiple sclerosis. And we got as far as Forbes and Bouquet, and it was fine. Then the only policemen I saw were two police women who were explaining to some people that we really had to be on the sidewalk to clear the street. And I didn't hear what they said, but they appeared calm and quiet and effective. And I was on the sidewalk right up against the, near the window of the door of Brugger's, I guess, actually pointed towards the door. Then the police were sort of sweeping people off the sidewalk. people went running down the sidewalk, and my scooter was knocked over with me in it. People were very solicitous, and they helped me up, me and my scooter up. I wasn't hurt, unless you count this little bruise on my elbow. And my scooter apparently wasn't hurt. My organizer, which was in my pocket, when the scooter was knocked down, it was trashed. But other than that, I just, I was on my scooter, I just scootered on home. The question is, why couldn't the police have been as calm and quiet and effective as those two police women who I saw? And I would suggest that since we're going to have turbulent times ahead, as long as we have this illegal war going on, that the Pittsburgh police ought to train some police and some leaders in peaceful, nonviolent intervention to deal with turbulent demonstrations without breaking into a shameful riot. Thank you very much.
By the end of the day, then, we had two people tasered, a number pepper sprayed, others beaten with retracted batons, people shoved to the ground, and we are here today to condemn the police roundly and soundly and demand full accountability. And we are really grateful that the Thomas Merton Center is joining us today in showing their support and condemnation for this police aggression.
How you doing? My name is Jim Kleisler, and I've been at the Merton Center for about a month. And this is obviously not how I wanted to have my first press conference. The Merton Center, number one, is extremely emotional, and I hope that the Pittsburgh Police Department understands that this kind of action should never happen, and hopefully it never happens again. It shouldn't have happened in the first place. The Thomas Merton Center condemns the violence that happened on Saturday when groups like the Pittsburgh Organizing Group question what the military institutions are doing in recruiting and preying on our neighborhoods and our families to go to fight a war that's unjust and immoral. It's only natural that they would do so, and that is a powerful and effective message. And it's a message of peace, and this is a peace and justice center that you're in now today. And to respond to messages of peace with outright violence, to me, is outrageous, and it decries everything that the Thomas Merton Center stands for. The Thomas Merton Center's anti-war committee issued this statement in response to the attacks on Saturday. It's a statement of solidarity and protest. We stand in solidarity with the Pittsburgh Organizing Group in protest of the Pittsburgh police tactics used to disperse the nonviolent demonstrators in Oakland on August 20th, 2005. The use of tasers, canine dogs, and pepper spray endangers the lives and health of nonviolent demonstrators. It is not only unwarranted, but in direct violation of City Council and Public Safety Department directives, and in violation of the civil rights of the demonstrators. We demand accountability by the Pittsburgh Police for its actions. And that's the statement. It's been endorsed by the Anti-War Committee and a number of other organizations already. This was just I really don't want to see this happen again. Appreciate the opportunity to talk to you. And in the future, hopefully, we can have more peace and justice and understand that a message of peace should be appreciated and not assaulted. Thank you.
Okay. We have a series of demands that we'd like to present to the public and the city. The first would be that we demand that people... We have a series of demands that we as Pittsburgh Organizing Group would like to present to the public and the city. The first one is we'd like to see all the charges from that day dropped. There was an unreasonable use of force. Most of the people were reacting to what they felt were bodily threatening situations. As one person put it, using a taser to make a misdemeanor arrest is like using a taser to pull somebody over for a traffic violation. Number two, we'd like to have the city investigate the police violence and misconduct. What happened was unreasonable. We don't want to see it happen again. And the only way to do that is to investigate it and make sure that everybody knows why it happened and how to prevent it in the future.
And as you also saw from the video, there was one officer responsible for firing his taser three times. And while we want to emphasize that this was a systemic problem, and we have no doubt that the police crackdown on dissent is motivated by the success of Pittsburgh Organizing Group in having shut down and stymied military recruitment in that area, we do want that officer at least suspended, if not fired, from his job. He should not be in possession of a taser. He should not be on the streets. That officer must be suspended or fired. And I believe we can find his name from the police reports. The next demand that we have goes beyond what happened yesterday, happened on Saturday. And that is, we demand an immediate moratorium on the use of tasers in this city. These so-called less lethal weapons have been responsible for more than 150 deaths. There are five suits pending of Taser International. The public outcry across the nation, indeed the world, has been so strong that now Taser International has been forced to remove the brand Less Lethal from its website. And for the police to use these weapons in clear violation of the guidelines that the city council members and the Citizens Review Board worked long and hard to develop is just ample evidence that these weapons are nothing short of torture toys, and that for them to be in the hands of police in this city, which is already has a long track record of police brutality from the housing projects, to Mount Oliver, to the recent police killing that happened last month, police should not be should not have these weapons in their possession. We're now going to open up the group to questions from the media. Okay, let's start over here.
Allowing for your collective sentiments there that the police overreacted, do you feel that there was anything any of you did that in any way precipitated the response that you received? For example, you didn't have a permit. You had some who were dressed in dark clothing, concealing their identities, and some might even say that they were dressed in an intimidating way. How do you respond to that?
I'll start with a response, and perhaps someone might join me. At the time of the police aggression, people were peacefully assembled in front on the sidewalk and in front of a closed military recruiting station. The second thing regarding the masks, imagine if you were watching a bunch of people in clown suits. Does that justify police pepper spraying them, clubbing them, using tasers? But masks are, people wear masks for a number of different reasons. Part of it is theater. Part of it is because in this climate of post-Seattle, post-911 repression, there is a very justifiable need to remain hidden from the police surveillance. At demonstrations all across the country, we are videotaped and photographed by the police. There is massive surveillance. And then the third of reason that people wear masks is to show solidarity with the Zapatistas in Mexico. And so, yeah, let me see if there's someone else.
But you didn't address the matter of why you didn't have the permit. Because that invited the confrontation.
Since when is it required for a right of assembly to stand in front of a sidewalk and protest? No permit was necessary.
Can I ask the videotape that we've seen?
One moment, please. Let me finish this question.
You can ask questions right now.
I know. Well, we haven't finished this first question.
I'll be right with you. If you want to go back, fine. The videotape that we saw that the freelance photographer shot very clearly shows that he was hit, apparently, by one of your people. And it was not just that incident that shows very clearly on the videotape, but to your credit or to somebody's credit in this group, they immediately said to him, hey man, that's not cool, don't do that, don't do that. And when the police went to get this guy, is where this melee started. That wasn't even mentioned by you folks during this whole thing that you've done today. You don't know about that?
I want to thank you for your question.
Especially if it wasn't a question.
And before we get to that, I would like to finish this gentleman's answer to this first gentleman's question. I think Nathan had something to offer. His question concerning the need for a permit, the wearing of masks, the assembly on the sidewalk.
When folks choose to wear something out of doors, they shouldn't be victimized for it. Wearing something is not a provocation. We didn't go there with weapons. We didn't go there with anything that could be construed as intimidating. Black cloth, to me, is not anything that the police should be afraid of. Their uniforms are black. Some of our clothes were black. I don't understand how it's an issue. And as far as not having a permit, the city has never traditionally required a permit to have a demonstration on the street. If people, as I mentioned earlier, chose to participate in an act of civil disobedience by walking in the street for a time, that was their choice. When, as Mr. Roberson said, two female police officers asked them to move onto the sidewalk, they did so, following police orders. And in my opinion, and the opinion of our group, and I think most of the people in this room, there's absolutely no excuse for the level of force used by the police for a minor misdemeanor offense of blocking traffic for 20 minutes. You cannot use potentially lethal force on people for misdemeanor charges. It is out of control and ridiculous.
I'd like to say something.
I want to be perfectly clear, and I think the videotape, I did nothing that was illegal, and anything that's been written has said that I didn't provoke the police. I didn't even have a button on. Fox News wrote that I was a bystander. I had nothing to identify me. So not everybody wore masks, and I did nothing that day. I told my children, I'm sorry if they're embarrassed, and my daughter said, what for? You didn't do anything wrong. And I want that perfectly clear.
I have a question. We're not going to return to this woman's question, which the question concerns the videographer who was allegedly calling for the police intervention. I have two things to say. The first is that the police are responsible for investigation. If there was innuendo, if there was a concern, the responsibility is not to pull out electrocution, but rather conflict resolution. Furthermore, we do not know who this videographer was, but we do know that he was there in a tightly packed sidewalk, swinging his camera around in a clear breach of journalistic ethics, banging people with it, shoving it into people's faces, and no doubt, inciting some provocation in that way. And, you know, for that, again, to be used, that innuendo, as justification for tasering, for pepper spraying, and for batons, it is a pretense for police aggression.
David.
We have one other question, starting with this. Did anyone else want to add anything about the Fox reporter?
I would.
Yeah, but we have, let's go with this man first.
That there was an independent cameraman who was on that day doing a job for Fox News, and that he had previously down at Carnegie Library had some kind of interaction with this particular protester, and that it seemed reasonable for me to interpret that when he said that he pushed the camera in his face and he pushed it away, that there was some intent on the part of the cameraman to unmask this man because he was wearing black or because he had a job to do that day. And the cameraman called for the police. The police was charged right in, and that's when the melee happened. So it seemed to me that it was a pre-intention. There was something going on right from the beginning.
Go ahead, sir.
Yes, our photographer was present during the altercation with the cameraman. He witnessed the attack, as you described, virtually to a T. I was inside at the time it happened, so I cannot say that I saw it. Our photographer said, who was a neutral observer in this, that it was an unprovoked attack and backed up the cameraman's description of what happened. The cameraman feared for his life, and after the incident, we have someone here who said that they feared for themselves. That's what he said. Whatever you think, that's what he said. He said it was unprovoked, and he was merely shooting the door with the sign on it. The other thing I would like to ask.
Show that very carefully.
Do you have a question, sir?
Thing I would like to ask.
Do you have a question? Oh, thank you.
Yes. So I'd like a response to another witness account by a neutral observer. Another thing I would like to ask, if you were interested in nonviolence, why march nearly 90 people through one of the busiest thoroughfares in the city of Pittsburgh against traffic in the middle of the day with children? And I would like for you to respond to this. And if your children were marching in the middle of traffic, and a person with disabilities. There were a wide range of people, so not everybody chose to be down traffic, but generally marching down Forbes against traffic is considered unsafe. Why do that?
Why don't we start with the last question that you asked, and I'll let these folks address that. Who wants to go?
Well, they're on the sidewalk, so the question doesn't apply.
And I think it's pretty nonviolent to walk against traffic. I mean, last time I checked, you know, somebody walking against traffic was not violent. And also, I take the issue that anybody from the Pittsburgh Tribune Review is a neutral observer.
You know me better than that.
Yes, I do.
You know me better than that.
Yeah, but you're talking about another person who's a neutral observer.
He was probably one of the youngest people that was mistaken for a protester. He was just a young kid, and he saw it, and he couldn't believe what he
saw. Well, I didn't see the
camera thing. Excuse me. Members of the media, I encourage you to stay focused on questions and not making testimony. I want to let Jonathan answer the other part of your question.
For a while, I was in the street on my scooter. There was a crowd in the street. We were just peaceably walking along. Traffic was going the other way. I didn't feel the least bit endangered when the two police women explained to us we had to get on the sidewalk. I got on the sidewalk and I looked like everybody else did to me. I would say at no time did I feel in danger. And in regards to the question of the gentleman in the tie, who I don't see at the moment, about whether people are wearing black and masks and intimidated. Having been in a crowd and being 62 myself, anybody who is frightened by these kids with their black shirts, with their, you know, black sleeves and the bandanas on, anybody who's frightened by that has got real problems. And I would also say something as a lawyer about the police conduct action. The police, and I've done this representing women who had trouble with their husbands, among other things. Police will not arrest you for what they're told you did. I have been told, my clients have been told, We'll keep an eye on things, and you can take action before the magistrate if you think that 10 minutes ago you were assaulted. That's the police job. They will not, on secondhand evidence, make an arrest. Only give a caution and tell both sides to behave properly. That's normal police procedure, which seemed to break down after working very well to get us all on the sidewalk when the two police women were explaining things to us.
David.
Thank you, Jonathan. One brief final response to this gentleman's question. I find it very disconcerting that a member of the media would be offering testimony to challenge the representation here and not reporting and investigating for himself. And testimony that is, in fact, innuendo and third hand. One last point. By the time that the police launched their attack on protesters, people were peacefully gathered on the sidewalk. The march lasted for a few blocks, and that was done with. Thank you, Janelle.
Okay. On tape, this is a testimony. I wasn't there. I have a copy of the tape. The photographer, and I could show it if you had the right equipment. I would.